ready when y'all are, I guess.
All right, ready?
Yep.
All right, 3, 2, whatever.
What is good, everybody? It's your boy Francis Carlotta on episode 39 of the Up and Under podcast. We're recording this on April 2nd, 2022, which means we are truly nearing the end of the NBA calendar year, which also means it is NBA awards season and time for us to pick our winners of the NBA's most coveted individual awards. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you want to look at it, there's no Connor Byrne this week for the podcast, but the man who I carried to multiple intramural basketball championships is here, and that man is Grant Hechinger. Grant, you remember that, right? That I carried you to those championships. And I've made this joke before, but I just want to reiterate that I was the one who carried you, right? I hope.
Yeah,
you
know. I mean, my biographer, actually, he thought he had the other way around, and he thought I was the one carrying him. And I made sure to correct him, make sure to put him in his place. Okay. Hey, no, this was Francis's team. We were all riding his coattails. We were all just like in his jet stream, propelling off of that.
That's right.
So no, yeah, it was. That's how I remember it, and I think you're exactly right.
Dude, I put in legitimate work. Remember how I lost a good amount of weight in college? So when I lost the weight, I put in so much work so I wouldn't just be a scrub on our intramural basketball team and just be totally useless and worthless to the team. So I was like, no, I'm going to lose weight, and I'm actually going to get better at basketball so I can actually help this team. And then Zach subbed me out of a very important game and just screwed up all of my hopes and dreams. But anyway, whatever. Also, this episode is brought to all the listeners by whiskey, because that's what Grant and I are drinking during this podcast, because it's a Saturday afternoon I'm in San Diego, you're in Charlotte. It's actually super cloudy in San Diego, which is not normal, but it's very cloudy and dreary. How's the weather in Charlotte? Is it nice?
It is nice. Cloudy here as well, just a little bit overcast, but it's been nice the past few days. Yesterday was very nice, today was nice for most of the day, but it's getting a little bit more overcast now. But yeah, just generic whiskey. This episode brought to you by whiskey,
right?
In general, just, no particular brand, just
exactly
whiskey.
Just whiskey, period. And with that said, let's get into our NBA awards. So the way I thought about layering this episode, and obviously let me know what your thoughts, I'm thinking of doing Sixth Man of the Year first, because that one's pretty straightforward. Then we'll go into Most Improved, Coach of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and MVP. I know there's Executive of the Year as well, but that should go to Zach Kleiman. We don't really need to discuss that. So does that sound okay to you?
That sounds good. And as I told you before the podcast, I did not prepare for Sixth Man of the Year, but like you said, it's pretty straightforward. I forgot about that one, but it should be pretty easy to decide on who that should be. So
yeah. All right. Sounds good. Awesome. So let's start. Sixth Man of the Year. Again, that one's pretty straightforward, right? It should be Tyler Hero. I mean, Tyler Hero is currently minus 20,000 in odds to win the award. I mean, I didn't even know that was, I didn't know you could do that for individual awards. Like, I didn't know something could be that lopsided. So yeah, it's Tyler Hero. Statistically, 20.6 points a game, 0.7 steals per game, 3.9 assists, 4.9 rebounds, shooting 55.6% true shooting percentage, and 38.8% from three. And he just had a fantastic year. He's by far Sixth Man of the Year. Grant, I'm going to give you 5 guesses to guess Tyler Hero's 3 nicknames on Basketball Reference.
Okay,
if you don't know them.
Open. I have his page open right now, but I'm not going to look
crap.
At it.
Okay, good. Okay.
Oh, God. I feel like I know. You know what? I don't think I know any of them, actually. I don't think I know a single one.
Just throw something out there. He's
his
white.
Three
he's
nicknames?
A shooter, something.
I mean,
yeah,
like.
3 nicknames. If you get one of these right, I'll be very impressed. Honestly.
White Mamba.
That's Brian Scalabrine. I think that's like, it's like trademark.
Splicac Harlow. I'm gonna say Splicac Harlow.
I like that one actually.
That's all I can come up
with. That's all you got. Okay, yeah. So his three nicknames on Basketball Reference are Boy Wonder, which I don't think I've ever heard anyone call Tyler Hero that.
Okay.
Bucket, which I mean.
Wait. I have one more. What else? Milwaukee's Best. Is he from Milwaukee? Is he just from?
No.
I'm gonna say Milwaukee's Best, but that's my other one. Okay, go ahead.
I have no idea where he's from actually, but anyway, Boy Wonder, Bucket, which I guess when you talk about Tyler Hero, people say, "Oh, that boy's a bucket," but I don't know if that's a nickname. Who knows? And then the third nickname, I have, again, also never heard at all. The Baby Goat. Have you heard that one? Baby Goat for Tyler Hero?
These all sound like nicknames that he gave himself, honestly. Like Baby Goat, yeah. 100%. He gave himself that nickname. Like, I don't think anyone... What does that even mean?
Who just started
mean?
Calling him that? Yeah, who's... Has anyone started like, calling him the Baby Goat?
Because it's like... That's basically saying he's... the best young player in the league,
right,
would be one interpretation, and I know that's something
he's said
not
before, right,
but he's not that, so like it just, yeah, he gave that and Bucket for sure. He calls himself those. Boy Wonder, I'm not sure if he gave himself that or someone that might have been someone else, but
maybe it's because he kind of looks like a goat. Maybe I'm imagining Tyler Hero's face in my head and comparing his face to,
I mean, he's got a little goatee-ish, but I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, he's sixth man of the year. I think that one's pretty easy. So let's move on to most improved. Grant, I think we talked about it last episode. Who should win most improved? That's Ja Morant. Are we still on the same page there, Grant?
We are. I'd like to talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, please.
Because as much as... Let me bring up my Google sheet here on this real quick. As much as Connor loves to hate on second-year players being mentioned for this award, which is one of the biggest things he loves to do, it's not like every second-year player is disqualified from contention. It's just that the expectation, the bar is set higher for second-year players because the expected improvement is the highest of any year. So like you have to improve so much more than everyone else because you're already expected to improve. That's already, you already have this improvement
right.
built in.
Right.
So it just takes a higher level of improvement to be considered. And I think this year we did have two guys who were at that level where they should be considered. I think we agree that Ja Morant should be the winner of this, but Desmond Bane, also in the Grizzlies, Desmond Bane and Tyrese Maxey both were worthy consideration. Tyrese Maxey actually... In my metrics for this ranked the best of anyone as far as how much they improved. He improved more than any player. Of course, he had a lower starting point than I think any player was probably the worst player of any of these guys last year. So that makes sense. But
right.
he was first. Second was Ja Morant, which is pretty incredible considering that he was dragged. He played barely more minutes. He played 0.7 more minutes, which is easily, I think, the least amount of minute increase of any of these guys that I considered, which I considered, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys here. And because of that low minute increase, his increases in assists, steals, and blocks were respectively 7th in these rankings out of 7, 6th, mm-hmm. and 6th. So he was dragged down in my metrics, my evaluation by those numbers, and still finished with the second best overall metrics as far as improvement. So, and we know what we talked about, that he improved in the most important way of any of these guys. I think I heard someone talk about Jason Tatum for this award. I think, you know, we talked about last time about how Ja being too good last year doesn't mean that he didn't improve this year. The difference here is that Ja was not even close to as good as Jason Tatum last year. Like Ja, as much as we love Ja, as much as he was a good player, like he did not compare statistically in any way last year to the player Jason Tatum was last year. Jason Tatum went from being an All-NBA level player to a little better All-NBA level player, and really a lot of his improvement,
maybe like second team, third team to a maybe first team All-NBA guy. Like that's the improvement
right.
Jason Tatum has made.
Right. And like Ja took the leap from like not an all-star, like shouldn't have been an all-star, to a first team All-NBA, probably first. That's a much bigger leap. And sure. Jason, I think Jason Tatum's improvement also, some of it is more like he had a bad, rough start to this year. He's come on really hot of late, but it's more kind of getting back towards the player he was last year. It's less of like a year-over-year improvement as far as like more like a half-year to half-year improvement. But I digress there. Jaws was had the best improvement in PER, the second best improvement in win shares per 48, the best improvement in box plus minus, and the second best improvement in Raptor of all these guys. And that's coming from a guy who was probably the best player of all these players last year that I evaluated. So he had started from a higher place and still improved at an incredible level in the most important way, in the most important, you know, portion of improvement you can have over these guys. So he's the clear choice to me.
Yeah, I agree. I can't really add much more to that. Jaws been phenomenal. And the Tatum thing, honestly, I haven't heard Tatum in this conversation. And the only thing I really have to say about that is, like, recency bias is one hell of a drug, man.
Yeah,
that's all I got to say. Recency bias.
I don't think he should be in this conversation. I just wanted to bring him up as far as like a point of comparison for like why I'm saying like the thing about Ja being too good last year just not does not hold water. Whereas with Jason Tatum, that actually does apply. So
yeah, no, I'm definitely with you, and I'm still with you on Ja Morant being the guy for most improved player. Something I want to ask you though is who would be second on your most improved list? So you have. Oh, would you have Maxey as your second?
Maxey was the second best of the metrics, but like I said, he was starting from a lower point of everybody and was a second-year player, but he's expected to improve a lot. Desmond Bane would have been third. Let me make sure you got third in my metrics, but just, again, a second-year player. So really who I would have second would probably be Darius Garland. Mm. With Jared Allen and Miles Bridges pretty close. DeJounte Murray was the other guy I evaluated too. It's tough to... I think DeJounte Murray would probably fall behind those guys because his team is actually worse this year. It hasn't really impacted winning, and that's not, you know, that's not entirely his fault. We can't put that on his shoulders. He's been a much better player, but I think these other players have been instrumental in their teams making pretty significant leaps this year. And that's Darius Garland, Jared Allen, and Miles Bridges. With Darius Garland probably would have been second for me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I like Darius Garland in second. For me, I got to shout out DeJounte Murray because for me, he would actually go second. And I'll do my statistical reason for DeJounte Murray. So 21.2 points per game. He's plus 5.5 from last season. 2 steals per game, plus 0.5 from last season. 9.3 assists per game, plus 3.9 from last season. 8.4 rebounds per game, that's plus 1.3 from last season. While shooting 53.3 true shooting percentage, which is plus 0.24 compared to last season. And 33% from 3, which is plus 0.13 from last year. Garland has a higher Raptor in WAR, which I'm sure you know. But Murray's win shares, box plus minus, win shares per 48, and his defensive numbers just as a whole are much better than Darius Garland's. And if you're a young player, it kind of takes you out of the running for most improved, that argument doesn't apply at all to DeJounte Murray because he's actually in his sixth season in the NBA, which kind of, I wouldn't say that surprised me, but I was marginally surprised when I found that out because I feel like he's such a young guy, but he's already in his sixth year and he tore his ACL in 2018, which, I mean, that's a major injury and look where he is now, which is awesome. And he was also picked 29th in his draft when he was drafted in 2016, and he averaged 3.4 points per game his rookie season, tore his ACL his third year, and now he averages 21.2 points per game. I mean, that's just incredible, and I like DeJounte's impact defensively and how he's a better all-around guy to me than Garland. He's as good of a passer, if not maybe a little bit better passer, with much worse teammates on the Spurs compared to on the Cavs, and yes, obviously Garland's a much better shooter than DeJounte Murray, but Murray has a good mid-range game. He gets to the rim really, really well. He uses his height really, really well. He's athletic. He can pass very well also. It does not take anything away from Darius Garland, who a lot of people have second. I'm just going to personally put DeJounte Murray because so much of these awards are narrative-driven. Plus, I think he's improved enough to back up, for me, being worthy of number two in the most improved race. What do you think about DeJounte?
Yeah, I love these guys on the list who have been around for a few more years and have kind of put it all together slowly instead of really just like coming to the NBA, being, you know, Darius Garland, who was like the fifth pick, and then just kind of like figuring out in year three, like Darius Garland, it all comes together. But like we kind of expected it for him. He had a slow start because of injuries. And kind of expected this for him. For DeJounte Murray, it's taken a little. He had obviously the ACL injury. It's taken a little bit longer. The Spurs, I remember before his second year and before his third year, were hyping him up to a massive degree. Yeah. We're expecting huge things from him, and he's been good, but never really took this type of leap until this year. So, I mean, I 100% respect the guys. And, like, me putting him probably, like, fifth on my list is no disrespect because he's...
Of course.
He's one of the better players on this list, and he might be better than Darius Garland. It's just that he was already pretty good, which is why probably I had him a little bit lower.
Yeah, no, I understand. Definitely understand. All these awards are very tight. It's just weird that there's such a clear-cut guy for this award. I feel in years past we've been able to do... Like, I think last season we did a whole episode on Most Improved. It was kind of earlier, much earlier in the year compared to now, but there was a legitimate conversation who could be the most improved player. But now it's pretty clear who is going to be the most improved guy, and that's Ja. So, and we're on the same page about that. So let's move on to Coach of the Year. I'll have you, Grant, start off on this as well, because I have a soapboxy type rant as to my justification for my Coach of the Year. So I'll let you, Grant, go first with who you have.
Okay, yeah, I did not do a whole lot of evaluation for Coach of the Year because I thought it was pretty simple to me. At least maybe I'm a little biased, but I'm just going to share my screen here with you just to show you what my evaluation was.
Oh, dear. I love this.
There's my evaluation for Coach of the Year.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so... I know this is an auditory medium and not a visual medium, so for listeners, I just have a sheet filled with Taylor Jenkins' name in very big letters because I think it is pretty clear to me that Taylor Jenkins is the Coach of the Year. I think Monty Williams is probably the other candidate, and I think Monty Williams is working with, I don't know, maybe not a better roster, but a team that we expected, a team that went to the finals last year. He did a great job, probably should have been Coach of the Year last year, but the team that we expected to be really good, and they've been probably better than we expected, but is Monty Williams even the coach, or is Chris Paul the coach? I think Taylor Jenkins, with what he's done with this roster, and absolutely maximized every single element of it, I mean, down to, like, Santi Aldama, like, every single player who plays, like, is playing good minutes. Tyus Jones is unbelievable. Ja's obviously... taking a massive leap. Jaren's coming to his own. Desmond Bain is just so freaking good. Literally every player works together. And then something me and my mom were talking about. I don't know if.
Oh, shout out to Grant's mom. So
we talked about, and I think Jeff Calkins might have just written an article about. She sent me an article. I didn't get time to read it yet. But what I've been thinking is the front office, whether intentionally or unintentionally, I would believe intentionally, has compiled a group of guys that are just really unselfish and likable guys and love to play together. And I would imagine that they've done that somewhat intentionally, that they really took into consideration character when they drafted or signed these guys or traded for, in Steven Adams' case. So that was my point to her, and she said, I think she made a good point that Taylor Jenkins probably has a lot to do with that. He's empowering them. He believes in them. So they have the best culture to me right now in the league as far as a team that loves to play with each other, and Taylor Jenkins is a huge part of that, and they have the second best record in the league. and they're way ahead of schedule. They're one of the best young teams of all time. There's just no, I think Taylor Jenkins almost every year, whether this year, any other year, this performance by Taylor Jenkins would win Coach of the Year and should win Coach of the Year. So you can go on your old spiel now.
Okay. My spiel is a little anticlimactic because we agree. Okay. So it's not as not as fun. But I love it. I the graphic, I hope for the listeners, I hope my laugh didn't break your eardrums. I was trying to go further away from the microphone because I have a naturally loud laugh, so hopefully it wasn't too bad. We'll hear that in post, I guess. But either way, yeah, it's Taylor Jenkins. Who should be Coach of the Year. And now that we've heard Grant's reasoning, hopefully my reasoning will shut the door on this conversation, because this, for me, this shouldn't be a conversation. This should be as easy as talking about Sixth Man of the Year for Tyler Hero. It should be that simple. So here I'll go, my reasonings for it, might get on my soapbox. Phoenix last season was 51-21, finished second in the Western Conference, and they made it to the NBA final, which all of us know. And they also pushed the Milwaukee Bucks to six games, the team that won the NBA title with one of the best players in the world, Giannis Antetokounmpo. And it was at a point in that finals, there was a point in that finals where we thought the Suns would win. We did a podcast. We were like, yeah, it looks like the Suns are just going to win the finals. They were in control of the whole season, this whole series. This looked like their finals. Obviously, we know they didn't win. Bucks won, but still. They put up a legitimate fight in the NBA Finals. Memphis last season was 38-34, eighth in the Western Conference, and they only got eighth in the West because they beat the San Antonio Spurs, and then they beat the Golden State Warriors in the play-in tournament. So technically, they finished ninth in the West, so not really eighth, technically. In terms of Phoenix, again, their roster, that same team that made it to the NBA Finals, that pushed the Bucks to six games, the most important player from that team who doesn't play for the Suns now is Javon Carter. That's probably the only player who doesn't play for the Suns currently who actually made some form of impact for the Suns last year. For Memphis, there were legitimate roster changes. Jonas Valanciunas traded for Steven Adams. Memphis drafted Zaire Williams, who has played serious minutes for Memphis this year. Grayson Allen, who was a huge three-point sniper last season, and he's now a Milwaukee Buck. Sure, the core stayed the same, but legitimate contributors left Memphis, meaning Coach Taylor Jenkins and the rest of the staff, that left them trying to incorporate multiple new pieces. In the preseason, the Suns were plus 1,400 to win the title. Now they're plus 340, depending on what betting site you look at. For Memphis, they were plus 10,000. Plus 10,000 to win the NBA title. Now they're plus 1,400 to win the NBA title. I don't understand why this is a conversation. What Taylor Jenkins has done with the Memphis Grizzlies, a team that was not anywhere projected to be this good, as you said, Grant, way ahead of schedule, for the job he has done to incorporate these new players, this incredibly young roster who doesn't have that veteran leader of a Chris Paul or even a Devin Booker, who doesn't have those veteran presence. This is, I don't know this to be true or not. If not one of the youngest rosters, it might be the youngest roster in the NBA. For Taylor Jenkins to do that with this team, I don't know why this is a conversation. Taylor Jenkins is Coach of the Year, period, point blank. Shut the door, close the briefcase, whatever analogy you want that shows the ending of something. That's it. It's over. He should be Coach of the Year.
Yeah, so currently Monty Williams is minus 2,000, Eric Spoelstra is plus 700, and Taylor Jenkins is plus 800. Which is just, it's such a bias for the number one seeds. Like, the Miami and Phoenix were expected to be good. Like, we're just like, oh, these teams are good, and we're supposed to be good, and they are good, so these coaches have done the best job, and that doesn't make any sense to me. The team that is not expected to be good and is just as good or better than, in Miami's case, these teams, and is this young, that's the better job. That's just clearly the more impressive job. So you're right. I mean, everything you said rings true. It's ridiculous that this is a conversation.
I mean, last season,
Taylor Jenkins is probably not going to win, is what it comes down to.
Unfortunately, you're right. Last season, Tom Thibodeau won Coach of the Year for what he did with the Knicks. He brought the Knicks from being a dumpster fire to the fourth seed in the East, which was a great feat. It was an awesome feat. So why are we not awarding Taylor Jenkins for bringing a team that was projected to be probably a play-in team at best to being a legitimate NBA title contender? Why would he not win Coach of the Year? I just don't understand why we're having this conversation. I don't understand why people are still trying to discount Memphis and what they've done. I just don't get it. So, and we're homers, we're from Memphis, blah, blah, blah. But even then, just as logical sports fans, I just don't get it. But yeah, that's all I got to say about Coach of the Year. Are you ready to move on to Defensive Player of the Year?
Yeah, let's move on.
All right. Moving on to Defensive Player of the Year, Grant. I'm going to throw my hands up like Miley Cyrus when they're playing her song, because I have no idea who is going to win Defensive Player of the Year. I'm actually going to leave this one 100% up to you and your metrics, because when I tried to break things down, I'm still very unsure. So, Grant, sure. Who is your Defensive Player of the Year?
I think you probably hit it on the nose there. This is the hardest, every year it's the hardest award to evaluate, because the numbers are inconsistent. They can be all over the board, depending on which numbers you look at with certain players. And often they're arbitrary. We don't know how real what number these numbers are, how real those numbers are. We don't know which to believe, really. So it's 100% the hardest award to evaluate, and I'm probably going to go in a different direction than it's going to end up being. But first, Tim Bontemps had a really great piece for ESPN where he interviewed, yep. I don't know if you read it, he interviewed
I did read
guards
it.
And bigs, so like Marcus Smart, Mikal Bridges, and then Rudy Gobert. I can't remember if there were other bigs too, but about which player type, about whether guards or bigs should win Defensive Player of the Year, and like who really is more important defensively. And I love that article actually, because I thought they all made really intelligent arguments for their own case, while also respecting what the other, you know, what the other positions do defensively as well. Right. I thought they were all like not taking away anything from the bigs, but like this is what guards do, and they presented it in a way that I don't think you often hear that type of honesty and respect combination from NBA players. You kind of just hear bullshit media answers, and those just seemed like real. Like these guys know what they're talking about. They take pride in their craft, and I thought it was a really interesting argument. So that I think just gave me a lot to think about in comparing bigs and guards, because the metrics overwhelmingly tend to lean towards bigs. Mm-hmm. Bigs end up contesting a lot more shots, and obviously their size advantage gives them a much greater ability to make those shots difficult. People are coming at them. They can see the whole floor defensively. They kind of know what to expect. So all the metrics tend to lean in the favor of big men, which makes it all the more interesting that out of the 11 players I evaluated, the player that graded the best, do you want to guess who it is?
Is it Gobert?
Nope.
I'll have another. Okay. I'll do a shot in the dark. It's probably wrong. Is it Jokic?
Nope, it is not. Although Jokic is an interesting case, because he is a perfect example of how the metrics can be all over the place. The metrics I used were defensive box plus minus and defensive Raptor, and then defensive estimated plus minus from dunks and threes, mm-hmm. and defensive field goal percentage difference. So how much worse opponents shot against you compared to their average. Mm-hmm. And Jokic in those first two, Jokic was first and second out of 11 guys. And in the second two, he was 10th and 11th.
Nice.
So they were completely divisive on him. Nice. Jokic has, I believe, has like the fourth best defensive box plus minus ever currently.
That's insane.
So like this is where, like, do we really think Jokic is that good of a defender? I'm not sure. Like, I don't know what to believe necessarily.
He has improved a lot, though. To be fair,
he has 100%. He's a good defender. Yet, yeah, I just don't know if he is willing to, if he's worthy of being defensive player of the year. The player who rated the best for me was Matisse Thybulle.
Ooh, okay.
Out of all these players, Matisse Thybulle, I considered three guards, and they were him, Marcus Smart, and Derek White. And Matisse Thybulle was, Marcus Smart was the worst of all of them, of all these players. Marcus Smart was the worst rated of all these players.
Odds-wise, if I remember correctly, when I looked at the odds.
Which, I mean, makes sense. The Celtics are incredible defensively, and he's a huge part of that. But the metrics do not see him on the same level as these guys.
Right.
And Derek White was, let's see, he's like 8th out of 11th here. So tied for 8th with Giannis, actually. But Matisse Thybulle was 1st, rated best out of everyone. He was 3rd in defensive box plus minus, 3rd in defensive Raptor, 1st in defensive estimated plus minus, and 6th in defensive field goal percentage difference, which is pretty crazy for a guard to be that low in defensive field goal percentage. So I struggled a little bit with, can we really give the award to a guy who's playing the least minutes of all these guys and therefore is really limited in the impact he can have defensively, because he's only playing about 25.6 minutes a game. Or can I even fault him for that, because the only reason he's playing that few minutes a game is because of his offense and not of his defense? And so the answers I landed on to those were, yes, we can give him the award, and no, I cannot fault him for that. So yes, Matisse Thybulle is my defensive player of the year, and I'm going to stick with that.
Okay. I like it. I mean, it's every single, well, I don't want to say every single, because I can't speak for every single basketball fan, but I'd say the majority of basketball fans, knowledgeable basketball fans, know how damn good defensively Matisse Thybulle is. I remember watching him in college, and the first time I saw him play a game, I think it was Washington, Arizona, on like a random night. I was like, oh, okay, basketball, I have nothing else to watch, so I'll watch Washington, Arizona. And I thought to myself, who the hell is this guy? He is flying around the floor. He defends with such fluidity, that's a hard word to say, fluidity, that I don't think I've ever seen in my life. He is such a fluid defender. He's not just 2-3 steps ahead of you. He's probably like 8 steps ahead of you. He knows where you're going to go before you've even started the thought in your brain. And he's so good anticipation-wise. And even if you do somehow get by him, it's not over. He'll block you from behind because he can anticipate when you're about to shoot, where you're about to shoot the ball, if you're going to hit a jump, if you're going to try and do a jump shot, if you're going to try and hit a floater, if you're going to try and finish at the rim. So even if you beat him off the dribble, that's not even half the battle. That's probably like a third of the battle when Matisse Thybulle is guarding you. He's special. He is a special defensive player. So I have literally no issue with you giving defensive player of the year to Matisse Thybulle, because eye test wise, he passes every eye test and more. So I have no issue with that at all. And like I said when I started, I have no idea who's going to win this award. I don't even have a prediction. I know that's a very boring and bland thing to say, but I just don't have one, because it could go to so many different guys for a plethora of reasons that people way smarter than me can list out in a more eloquent manner. So I just can't predict this award. It could go to Giannis. It could go to Draymond Green. It could go to Matisse Thybulle. It could go to Mikal Bridges. It could go to Marcus Smart. It could go to Bam Adebayo. And I'm probably missing like 3 or 4 people just in that list of names. So it's so hard to give this award to, so hard to quantify. That article you mentioned, Grant, is great. I really enjoyed reading that as well, seeing the different perspectives of hearing the perspective from actual NBA players on what it means to be a defender in the NBA, guarding the best scorers on the planet. And they, what I love though, each person who is up for this award, Jaren Jackson is another name I forgot to mention, Gobert didn't mention that list either. But each person who's up for this award, they take pride on the defensive side. And they also take pride in how they defend, because they, like was mentioned in the article, they defend in different ways. They impact the game in different ways. But they take immense pride in that, and I love it. I love it. And so this is the one award where it could go to one of probably eight to ten guys, and I would just have no issue with it. So I have no issue with you giving the Thibault at all.
Yeah, I don't think Thibault will end up winning this award. I don't believe that. But yeah, I mean, like I said, he's my guy. Right behind him in my rankings were Bam Adebayo and Jared Allen. They were just behind Matisse. And then let me just go through the whole thing. So Matisse was first. Those guys were tied for second. Then fourth place was Rudy Gobert. Fifth place was Robert Williams III. Sixth place was Jokic. Seventh place was Giannis. Eighth place was seventh was Giannis and Derek White. So then ninth place with Joel Embiid. Tenth place, Jaren Jackson. And 11th was Marcus Smart. So I'm just the edge for Matisse Thybulle is just, like, I think it's similar to the Most Improved Award with second year players, where they're already starting from this baseline of like expected improvement. Bigs already kind of have a leg up in these metrics.
Right.
They're expected to be really good in these metrics, and that's why this list is 8 bigs and 3 guards, and most of the top of the list is populated by bigs. So the fact that Matisse Thybulle rated better than all of them as a guard, who's averaging in only 25.6 minutes per game, he's averaging 1.7 steals and 1.1 blocks, and is top 3 in 3 of these metrics. It's just that was what gave him the leg up. And like I said, he probably won't win it. I don't think probably any of the guys near my top of my list will win it. I think it will be someone like Rudy or Joel Embiid or Giannis, one of those type of guys, maybe Robert Williams III. I doubt Jared Allen's going to get it, or Bam Adebayo is going to get it. Another guy who would have been on this and might have ended up winning this had he played enough minutes was Draymond Green. He just has missed too many games, but he's been incredible defensively.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. Can't echo what you're saying anymore. So we'll see who wins Defensive Player of the Year and congratulate them when that time comes. So let's move on to the big one. The big award that has dominated conversations for a long time over the past few months. So let's talk about the MVP, the most valuable player
of the year.
Oh, first. Yeah. I totally forgot that award existed. So, let's do Rookie of the Year first then. I'll start with Rookie of the Year. I think it was start of the year for me. It happened with waves. I think it was clearly Evan Mobley for a period of time. And then he's kind of regressed a smidge. And then he's recently got hurt. He's got dinged up a little bit. And there's Scotty Barnes, who's been consistently very good. He's been the surprise of the draft class to a decent degree. I remember talking about the draft when it happened and Scotty Barnes being drafted third, Jalen Suggs being drafted fourth. We were all a bit confused by that. We were all
fourth or fifth,
thank you. And we were all like, oh wow, that's not how we thought that would go at all. That the Raptors made a mistake. But no, they drafted the right guy. They got either way, point being, we were all a bit taken aback by that decision. And Scotty Barnes has been great. He's had a very consistently very, very good year, not just for a rookie, but just in general. He's had a very good year. And, you know, for the first half of the year, I'd say Cade was kind of flying under the radar a bit. He was good. He was a good player. But I think there were some concerns about him. He wasn't showing the flashes of a number one pick that you would expect to come from a number one pick. But then I'd say for the past month and a half, he's been really good. Cade Cunningham has played very, very good basketball over the past month and a half and kind of inched his way closer to being Rookie of the Year. So that's what makes this award, I guess, for me, difficult to choose. I'm gonna still stick. I'm gonna stick with Evan Mobley as my Rookie of the Year, just because he's been consistently throughout the entire season very, very damn good. And yes, again, he's injured right now, but it's more of hopefully it's not serious. But he's made such an impact on the Cavs as a rookie in terms of helping the Cavs be an Eastern Conference contender. They were viewed more so as a contender earlier on in the year. Now they're like a team who would be happy to get out the first round. But still, considering where a lot of people thought the Cavs would be before the season started compared to where they are now, I think he's been a big part of why the Cavs have taken that step forward. Garland, of course, a big reason why as well. But I think Evan Mobley's had a fantastic year. His impact's been great. So I'll go with Evan Mobley as my Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, Mobley's definitely the favorite and probably will end up winning the award. And I feel like pretty confident about him ultimately being the best player from this group, or at least him and Cade. Cade's the one you could maybe push ahead, but Mobley's going to be a really good player. But like you said, after a really strong start, he has slipped the past couple months, especially defensively. Over the first 4 months of the season, opponents shot significantly worse than average against him in every single one of those months. Before in February, they shot 0.1% better against him. And then in March, they shot 4.1% better against him. And this has had like a huge effect on the Cavs, who ranked 13th in defensive rating in October, 7th in November, 2nd in December, 6th in January, 8th in February, and then fell all the way to 26th in March, which has been the main culprit, obviously, with them falling to what I believe is the 7th seed now, and in the play-in game currently.
Yeah.
So I think Mobley will probably win it, but on the other side, there are two guys I have ahead of Mobley who have gotten stronger as the season has gone on, and one of them is not Cade Cunningham. So the first one is Franz Wagner.
Yep.
There is something to be I think there is something to be said for, even though he's on a very bad team, I think there's something to be said for how good he has been.
Yeah.
Despite taking a bigger role than expected on a horrible team with bad teammates, doesn't have spacing, and he's still like having to create a lot of his own stuff, and yet he rates really well in these metrics. Of the five guys I considered here, he is third in PER, third in win shares per 48, third in BPM, first in on-off rating, first in Raptor, and first in estimated plus-minus. So he actually rated the second best of my metrics here. And I very, very strongly considered giving him the Rookie of the Year. But the guy I ended up going ahead of him with was who you mentioned, Scotty Barnes. Because he has also had that same type of improvement as the season has gone on, but it's been for a really good team that is rising really fast. And they've asked him to do a lot on both sides of the ball. He's guarding, you know, all five positions. He's playing point guard. He's playing power forward. He's playing center. He's doing all this stuff for a really weirdly constructed team. And in this group, he is first in PER, first in win shares, first in box plus minus, second in Raptor, third in SMA's plus minus, rated the best overall, and is playing for the best team of all these guys right now. I think Scotty Barnes, like you said, not that I wasn't a fan of Scotty Barnes. I liked him a lot even in high school. I was just kind of taken aback because I thought Jalen Suggs was a level ahead of Scotty Barnes, and that is, I'm not 100% that won't prove correct in the long run, but in the short run, that has proved very stupid, because Scotty Barnes has been really good while Jalen Suggs has obviously floundered. Scotty Barnes, I'm going to go with him for my Rookie of the Year.
I like it. I think Scotty has been, like I said, really, really damn good. And I don't have a lot of issue with that either. He has made, like you said, such a high impact for the Raptors and played just really, really good basketball. I like Scotty Barnes a lot. I like that pick for Rookie of the Year. Yeah, all right, so let's go into the MVP the most valuable player in the NBA. I am very excited to hear what your metrics say, Grant, because I feel we've been on the same page about MVP for really the whole year. And with the recent play of some certain players, who I'm sure we'll discuss, I'm curious if that's changed anything for you. So I'll let you start, Grant. Who is your most valuable player?
Yeah, I only really considered three guys here. There's other names you can bring up, but it's going to be one of, and it should be one of, Jokic, Embiid, and Giannis.
Agreed.
So those are really only three guys I considered, and I didn't honestly need to dive into the stats too much. I have them compiled, but didn't need to do a bunch of evaluating and congregating, or whatever word you want to use.
Congregating?
Yeah, something like that.
Is that the right word?
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, yeah.
To decide between these three, because Joel Embiid and Giannis Antetokounmpo are incredible players and have had incredible seasons. But Nikola Jokic's season is just off the charts. He has, I think... Wait a second. He's just better by every single measure. His box plus minus is number one all time by a significant margin, a fairly significant margin over 2009 LeBron. His total Raptor is first since 538, started that in 13-14 by a very large margin over Steph, I believe, in his unanimous MVP season. He's missed seven games so far, but despite that, if he plays the remaining games at this pace, his VORP will rank 12th all-time. And last but not least, as we discussed earlier, make what you will of it, but his defensive box plus minus currently ranks 4th all-time.
Yeah.
Oh, and on top of all that, his team's record is basically identical. They're a half game behind the Sixers, two and a half games behind the Bucks,
right,
despite the fact that Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray have been out all year. And yes, Ben Simmons was out a lot, but the Sixers had Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris and Seth Curry and now James Harden. It's not the same.
Nope.
Jokic's season has been unbelievable.
Yep.
And back-to-back MVPs are really hard to win, and I kind of am loath to do it against two, unless it's just... I feel like that's just incredible territory that not... just any old player should get. Not that Jokic is just any old player, but like, this is starting to enter all-time stuff, but he deserves back-to-back MVPs at this point. This is a better season than he had last year when MVP.
Talk to him.
And he is just well ahead of the incredible competition that Joel Embiid and Giannis have provided. It doesn't even compare.
Yeah, I feel like you should just do a mic drop and we should end the podcast. There's nothing I can say. Again, there's nothing I can say because I'm fully with you. We've been on the same page about the MVP conversation for months. And I was, like I said before, I was intrigued to see if other names have snuck up on you in terms of the metrics and the numbers, if any of them have made that impact on you to want to give them perhaps the slight nudge in favor of Giannis, in favor of maybe Joel, but probably mostly Giannis is over Joel even at this point in time. But I still give it to Jokic pretty easily. I won't lose any sleep about that. I also won't lose sleep if Giannis won MVP. I also wouldn't lose sleep. I'd be very happy for him. It'd be fantastic. Do I think Jokic deserved it over Giannis? Yes, but I'd still be very happy for Giannis if he won MVP and it wouldn't piss me off or anything. But I guess the only thing that would bother me to whatever degree is the whole Devin Booker thing. What are we doing here with putting Devin Booker in the MVP conversation? Like, what's happening? Why are we doing this? And also, what does that even mean to put him in the MVP conversation? So, does that mean when we are having a conversation about MVP that we should mention Devin Booker's name? Okay, cool. Grant, we're having a conversation. We mentioned Devin Booker's name, and there you go. he's in the MVP conversation. Like,
I would mention him to say that he should not be in this conversation. That's exactly the only reason he should be brought up. But yeah, exactly.
Like, what does that concept mean? Oh, well, he needs to be in the MVP conversation. Why does he need to be in the car? Who cares? Like, he's not one of the top three best players in the NBA. He's not better than Giannis, Joel, or Jokic by any stretch of the imagination, by any metric that NBA fans, NBA analysts, NBA people can use. And yes, he's on the Suns, who is the best record in the NBA. So maybe you can, people who want Devin Booker to be in the conversation, they'll argue, oh, well, a player from the best team in the NBA should be in the MVP conversation. All right, again, who cares? It doesn't mean he's actually an MVP contender, because he's not. It is between Jokic, Giannis, and Joel. Joel has been phenomenal the entire year, but I think the addition of James Harden on that team kind of lessens Joel's case, because Joel was so dominant, was so good. He was keeping the Sixers afloat, not just afloat. He was keeping them as a top three team in the East for basically the whole year without Ben Simmons. And that's what was helping propel Joel's MVP case, arguably by some people, over Jokic. But now with Harden there, that argument is kind of gone, which is unfortunate, because Joel's been fantastic. But that's the way I look at it for Joel. For Giannis, he's been absolutely otherworldly. He's been insane. But he's still doing that with a phenomenal team around him, with a team that he won the NBA title with Chris Middleton, with Jrue Holiday. He's doing that with a fantastic supporting cast. It's just what we expect from Giannis. What Jokic is doing without Michael Porter Jr., without Jamal Murray, it's insane. I don't have the on-off numbers in front of me or off the top of my head, but I know, and Grant, you might have them in your metrics, but the on-off numbers when Jokic is on the floor compared to when he's off the floor, it's
14.8, which is four points higher than Giannis.
It's dumb. Like, it's a stupid amount. And he means so much to the Nuggets, a team that, as you said, record-wise, is right there with Philadelphia and Milwaukee. So Jokic should win MVP, and really, that should be that. If Giannis wins it, okay, that's fine. I'm happy for Giannis. He's fantastic. But it should be Jokic, and that should be that. And Devin Booker should, who cares if he's in the conversation? So that's all I really have to say.
I don't think I've even heard Devin Booker, but that just makes me think of the same like argument we have against Kobe being considered like top three of all time. It's like, we're not that saying that Kobe's bad. We're just saying he's probably a top 15 player of all time, which is really good. And not a top three. And it's funny because probably the same people who argue that for Kobe are arguing this for Devin Booker.
Sure.
Devin Booker, he's really good. Should be a third team, probably all NBA guy. Might not make an all NBA team. I would have him third team. I don't know. I haven't done my evaluation of that yet. But
that's for another episode.
But that's a really good spot to be in. That's elite. It's just not the third best, a top three player or the best player in the league. And just because he's on the best team, I mean, we didn't give Tim Duncan MVP for the 2013-2014 Spurs.
Right.
You know, it's a team thing. Devin Booker's really good, but he's part of a team, and this is individual award. So,
yeah, and also
it's good.
I just want to take also this time to shout out DeMar DeRozan and his fantastic year that he's had.
Yeah.
Because
100%.
He could have been on an MVP ballot. He still might be on an MVP ballot. But I feel like at a point in time this year, he looked like a lock to be a top five MVP candidate to be on a ballot. But then his play has kind of regressed, unfortunately, over the past few months. The Bulls have been, oh, God, I feel bad for Bulls fans. I feel bad for my fiance's dad, who's a Bulls guy. They've just been so disappointing over the past month. And a lot of that has to do with no Lonzo Ball. They just got Caruso back as well. But also, DeMar has been a little more inefficient. He's kind of reverted a smidge back to what we know DeMar DeRozan to be. He's still putting up great numbers, but then he's doing it at a much less efficient rate, which was the opposite of where he was at for, I'd say, two-thirds of the NBA season. He was putting up insane numbers at a very high efficiency rate, which was new for DeMar DeRozan. He's never been that efficient before. So it's unfortunate that he's regressed, and it's unfortunate the Bulls have also regressed. But, hey, massive shout-out to him and the fantastic year he's had. He's still an all-NBA guy for sure. Again, also shout-out to Ja Morant in the MVP conversation. If he didn't get hurt over the past week and a half, maybe he could have propelled the Grizzlies even more. Maybe he could have upped his play to enter the top three conversation in the MVP voting. But even when Ja Morant was at his peak, and I know Memphis Twitter, Memphis fans might get on me for this, but even at his peak, he still wasn't going to touch Jokic. He still wasn't going to touch Embiid. He still wasn't going to touch Giannis. And that's just the way it is. But Joss had a fantastic year. So also shout out to Ja Morant as well in the MVP conversation.
Yeah, I agree with the love for DeRozan. He's had an incredible, pretty unprecedented year improving at this age. And then to touch on Ja, I mean, like you said, he just doesn't statistically hold up to these guys as good as he is. As good as his counting stats are, his advanced numbers do not statistically, they do not put him on the level with these guys. If you were going to close the gap, if you were going to try to make an argument to close that gap, it would have to be with the energy and the leadership and the joy that he brings to the game and how much that has affected the Grizzlies. But that's just getting too intangible. To measure when you're talking about MVP. When you're talking about the best player in the league, I can't that much intangible stuff to like jump him up a level above these guys. So yeah, he does not measure up statistically as good as he is, and all love to Ja for that. But yeah,
for sure. Again, we're gonna do an all NBA episode, which is arguably my favorite episode of the year. So we'll talk a lot more about first team guys, second team, etc. But Lucas had a fantastic second half of the season. He could be a top five MVP guy. He's another dude who's been fantastic. Tatum's been really damn good. He could be a top five MVP guy. Who knows? But that just goes to my thing about Booker. It's like, here you go, people. We mentioned Devin Booker in an MVP conversation. Like, there's a lot of people on NBA Twitter like mad about this. Oh, why isn't Devin Booker in the MVP conversation? He blah, blah, blah. Who cares? He's just in the conversation. That doesn't mean he should be seriously considered for the award. He shouldn't. So that's all. That's all I wanted to say. That was like my drinking and a half of, well, actually two drinks of whiskey at this point. That was my drunk rant that's bothering me about NBA Twitter and NBA people. So
I agree with you. I think what we're really seeing, what we're witnessing here is pretty amazing. Because you just named all those guys. It is like a new list of guys. Like, this is two years ago, none of these guys would have been a completely different list, right? And this is just completely replaced. So, like, Giannis would probably be the only holdover 2 years ago in like a top 10 MVP conversation. And we just named all these guys that are new. So just the talent in the NBA, the next generation is in really good hands, which is always exciting to see.
Yeah, fully agree. All right, so those are the NBA awards for the 2021-2022 season. No Connor on this episode, so I guess we're not going to do bets. Though, I think Connor won, right? Or do we have the Final Four one? But I think he won the...
We did Final Four, that's right. I don't know. I didn't.
I'm pretty confident he won the most recent bet again. So, yeah, whatever.
We'll wait. We'll let him try to defend his win streak. We'll just wait for him to come back. Because I want to win fair and square against him. I don't want to take a cheap shot win here.
Yeah. Fully agree. But all right, y'all. Thank you everybody for listening to this episode of the Up and Under podcast. And make sure to rate our podcast, give us 5 stars, leave us a review. You know you can find us anywhere podcasts are found. Hit us up on wherever, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, if you even use Facebook, who cares? I don't even know. I'm kind of drunk right now. But until next time, peace. Boot days, hot tops, with my blue face, ice pops. I'ma make a shoelace, necklace, yeah, we whipping pops on.
Lexus, and I'm skipping school days. Mic drops, eyes on summer like Cyclops. Yeah, we falling off the sidewalk. Mama wants a home.